Welcome to What the Fantasy, and I am Brandon Hay. You can find me on Twitter at HayB3.
Good evening. My name is Zadeh Cantabedian, and you can find me on Twitter at ZCantsFF.
So we're doing a special recording tonight on Monday because someone has a vacation plan. So let me hear about what your plans are.
Yeah, we're doing me and just a couple friends and my sister. We're all going to meet up at this little beach down a few hours south of me. It's called San Onofre Beach. It's like North County, San Diego. So we're going to do a couple of nights of camping, a couple of nights of surfing, some beers, some games on the beach. That's about it. You know, just get out of town for a little bit and kind of spread our wings a little bit and spend some time under the stars. Should be a good time. And then come back and got a few more days off before I got to get to work. I start work again on Tuesday. So, you know, just going to enjoy this week. It's going to be a good week. And then I got my home league draft on Sunday. Really excited about that. And then, you know, we're rolling right into football. So camping, surfing, vacation, right into football. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, I think it's good for you that you're doing this little time to recharge before, you know, all the football starts and everything. So so for your home league, what kind of fantasy football league is that?
It's like it's your standard league. Like it's 10-team league, just your regular two running backs, two wide receivers, one tight end, one flex. Half point PPR. These guys, they don't like change really. They don't really want to move things around. And honestly, that's totally fine with me because playing with a bunch of other guys, like other analysts, and the way they tweak their leagues with super flex this, and you know, there's just the different scoring settings. It's refreshing to come back to a home league where the scoring is just straightforward. And it's not all crazy roster configurations. I used to kind of like, I would try to evolve it and make it something like more contemporary, more progressive, but it's just kind of just the league that it was when it was first created, like, you know, 11 years ago or 12 years ago. And the only thing that changed was that we made it half point PPR. That's it. And the scoring has gone insane ever since then. But we're having fun. And I think we're all good with it. If anything, try to make it a keeper league. Not a dynasty league because these guys, they're not gonna follow like college football and stuff like that, and they're not gonna want to do rookie drafts and stuff like that. But yeah, we still take pride in destroying each other every single week, and it's probably some of the sweetest victories and the most devastating losses I've ever had experienced. I hate it. I hate losing these guys. It ruins like half of my week. And winning, you're on cloud nine, you know, for the first 2 days of the week. So it's the most important league for me, even though it's redraft.
Yeah, I just did one on Saturday that's redraft with a lot of friends. It is not PPR. So that is very hard for me to go from used to all the PPR values for fantasy football and go to ones where there's not. So that's always a big, you know, I have to adapt to that because I'm just not used to it because it's so ingrained in us. Most leagues are PPR now. So
yeah,
I think I've only made the playoffs once in like 11 years in this league.
Yeah.
So not doing great. But, you know, here's hoping that this is the year.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, in PPR, like if we had a discussion about PPR, that's a different topic. But I still think like half point PPR, half a point, I think is still too much for a catch, for a single catch. I think it should be like 0.2 maybe at least per catch because it's just a catch. You know, you're just catching the ball. It's just once, you know, I don't know. That'd be cool if they could do like PPR, like based on like how you're catching the ball. Like if it's a really hard catch, like that's like 5 points. If it's like a one-handed catch, that's like 1 point, you know, or if it's just like a straight between the numbers, it's like one, at 0.1 or something like that. That'd be cool. Like modified PPR. If you could control for that, different discussion.
Man, I was just saying do PPR based on, you know, how far the pass is and you're going in with, you know, what kind of catch it is, if you're using one. I like that, but man, that would be incredibly difficult to do.
Yeah, I don't know how you control for that. You have to be a computer programmer to come up with your own website. I don't know.
All right, so now we'll move into the NFL news. We have a few little pieces of news. First is the J.K. Dobbins injury for the Ravens. So there's been a lot of talk because Harbaugh wanted to make sure that he won that game because they've won, I believe it was 19 straight preseason games and the record was 20. I think I would not have necessarily said that if I was him. I would just said, you know, I want to play the starters a couple series rather than even bring in, you know, that meaningless record. But I'm very sad about this because I was very high on Dobbins this year. I don't think it's come out the extent of his injury, but a lot of speculation I've seen is that he's most likely going to miss the whole year. So what are your thoughts about, you know, them even playing Dobbins in that preseason game, and how do you see this affecting the Ravens going into the season?
I mean, why? It's your last preseason game of the year. Let the guys who are trying – we know what J.K. Dobbins can do. We know what Gus Edwards can do. We know what these we know what the starters are capable of. We don't have to see this anymore. Two games at the most is fine. We've already limited the preseason to three games. We've taken it down a game from four games. We don't need to see anymore. It's preseason, guys. Like you're in the AFC North. You're one of the toughest divisions in football. So what are we doing here? Let Justice Hill play. Let all the other guys who are trying to make the squad play. They're trying to earn time. You know, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. Coaches need to stop doing this with their players. Outside of that, yeah, we got Gus Edwards. He's the next man on deck. I like him a lot. He's just your standard like bruiser back. He's functional. I'm kind of happy to see him, get his time to shine, see what he can do. We all know him to be not of the pass catching type caliber, but it's going to be interesting to watch him have more expanded role during the season. Let's see what he can do. He's always come off to us as this bruising north south runner who can, you know, get the job done and, you know, get those tough yards. But I'm still somewhat skeptical that they don't add somebody because they have no depth behind him. And I don't think they want to go into the season with just Justice Hill behind him. I know they got that rookie. I forgot his name. What's his name? The rookie or the UDFA that everybody's touting. I forgot his name. Tyson something. But there are cuts coming up. I'm expecting Latavius Murray to be cut. I'm expecting Rashad Penny to be cut. I'm expecting, you know, Curtis Samuel could be a nuisance if he's not Curtis Samuel. Jalen Samuels from the Steelers. Devonta Freeman could be cut. God, there's a litany. There's, you know, Peyton Barber could be cut. He can come over and be a little, you know, pain in the butt as that secondary running option. So there's some guys who can still come over after cuts who don't need, you know, to catch up on the playbook because they understand like the basic blocking scheme. So I'm still holding on that there's going to be another guy added because there's just no depth behind Gus Edwards. And this is one of the, I think the most run heavy team in the league, maybe outside of the Browns. So expect another running back to come in.
No, I agree. And I know people have said that when they brought in Todd Gurley, that they might sign him. It's an interesting, you know, kind of situation because Gus Edwards will get most of the running work. And then I'm wondering if they bring in Justice Hill more on the passing, or maybe we see that Gus Edwards can catch passes or, you know, can be involved in the passing game. He just never has. I'm not totally sure how much pass work he got at Rutgers. And another question I have is, we kind of thought Lamar might run less because they drafted these receivers. They brought in Sammy Watkins, and now, you know, Bateman's been hurt. I know Andrews left practice one day. I think he should be fine. And then I saw something about Hollywood being a little injured, you know, and Sammy Watkins, I heard, injured already. And now with Dobbins hurt, I do wonder if that means there's going to be even, you know, more Lamar running until they bring in another running back. And I truly hope they do not bring in Peyton Barber if he gets cut, because I just think Peyton Barber is not very good at all, but he just keeps on getting onto these teams and taking away, you know, value for these other running backs. I just hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah. I think the Ravens we saw right when preseason started, Rashawn Bateman going down with Marquise Brown missing time, with Sammy Watkins missing time. We saw this kind of like perpetual trend of all these pass catchers kind of just leaving the field due to injury. And then you just kind of have that internal envisioning of what's going to happen with the Ravens, that they're going to go back to this rave. They're going to go back to this even more run heavy offense. You know, whoever was optimistic about them opening it up and throwing the ball this year, I think they're going to completely regress back into a very run heavy team, throwing to the tight end, not really throwing outside the numbers much. I think they want to push their boundaries a little bit of their offense to kind of open it up. But this is just going to cause them to run the ball a lot more. I think Lamar Jackson is going to be a lot more involved in the run game than they originally intended him to be. Kind of feel bad for the Ravens because I think they wanted to show the league this year that they are not just, you know, this run-centric offense. And a lot of teams last year, you know, they saw what was happening to the Ravens. They understood what was happening with the Ravens. And there's no way that a team is going to look at what the Ravens are doing this year and say, oh, okay, they're totally going to throw the ball this year. They're going to totally throw the ball to open the year up. No, they're not. They're going to run the ball more. And most teams, most defenses, executing. They knew what to do, and they were executing, which are two different things. So, you know, I think it's going to be tough for the Ravens. They might, you know, have some troubles to start the year off in their schedule.
No, I agree. So we'll move on to the Nets part of news. And this caught me by surprise a little bit because I hadn't really heard anything. Gardner Minshew was traded to the Philadelphia Eagles for a conditional sixth-round pick, I believe. I first was surprised. I thought the Jaguars could maybe get a little more for Minshew. And second, I was surprised that the Eagles traded for Gardner Minshew. So what do you think the reasoning for the Eagles was? Do they just want a better backup than Joe Flacco? Or is this kind of an insurance policy if Jalen Hurts doesn't work? What do you think?
I think it had a little bit more to do with Nick Mullins. Nick Mullins was playing really, really bad during the preseason, and he flashed at times with the Niners a couple of years ago when they were just completely decimated at the quarterback position. But it does scare me for some reason. When I heard that he was going to the Eagles, I was kind of like, I eased up off that like click button on the mouse over Jalen Hurts' name in the draft lobbies. I was like, what the hell is happening here? Why are we doing this? He's just that guy that shows up on the team. He'll win the locker room over. He's got that pizzazz. He'll come in with a cut off jean shorts and his dad Reeboks on or whatever, his headband and his mustache. The guy's got he's got charisma and character, dude, and that counts. That goes a long way in a locker room. You can be really bad, but if the team loves you, you're gonna hang out. But I think Joe Flacco will stick. They're not gonna cut Nick Mullins, and they're not gonna keep Nick Mullins and cut Joe Flacco. They're gonna cut Mullins. They're gonna keep Flacco, and they're bringing on Minshew as added depth. I can't tell you if he's gonna start this. If he's gonna see playing time this year, I don't know if they feel comfortable starting him over Joe Flacco. I don't know. I know Joe Flacco is the polar opposite of what Jalen Hurts is. So maybe Minshew can be closer to what Jalen Hurts is as opposed to Joe Flacco if they need to run that same kind-ish offense, you know, the RPO offense. So maybe that's what that's about. But it's definitely not an immediate threat to Jalen Hurts at all right now. It's maybe in the case of emergency or unless Jalen Hurts completely just caves in on himself.
I agree. I think the more about Jalen Hurts getting replaced by Minshew will be more media driven and more fan base driven in Philly, because we know how Philly turns when someone isn't playing well. And even if Hurts, you know, is playing okay and they're losing games, I could see that. And like you're saying, you know, I think Minshew obviously isn't a great runner, but he's mobile. He can, you know, run around a lot, and a lot of those receivers are kind of speedy receivers that could, you know, on scramble drills kind of get open. So I think that's another added bonus. Obviously, I am surprised by this, but I do know Nick Mullins has looked horrible this preseason, like you said. And I don't think C.J. Beathard is very good, but he's looked fairly good in the preseason, and I know that the Jags brought him in, which I was surprised by. So I'm really hoping Trevor doesn't get hurt, because I don't, as 49er fans knows, they don't want Nick Mullins or CJ Beathard lead their team. So yeah, I just thought it was interesting the deal that was made. And if I was the Jags, I would have asked for a little more, but maybe they were just trying to get him out of there. Maybe because Jacksonville, everyone in Jacksonville and Duval, they still have a love for Minshew, even though, you know, he showed, you know, he's not great all the time. So maybe that was a way to get him out. So, you know, if Trevor ever has a bad game, you know, you don't have everyone yelling for Minshew. I don't know if that had anything to do with that, but I thought he would go somewhere like Denver, or something like that, which I kind of wanted him to go to. But definitely an interesting move that we'll have to see what happens during the season. And the last bit of news is that the tight end for the Minnesota Vikings, Irv Smith, is injured, and they are waiting on tests to see how long he will be out. I know he was a big sleeper candidate that to kind of break out this year, and I got him in a couple leagues, so I'm a little worried about that. But I do know they have Tyler Conklin there, and they drafted Zach Davidson. So what do you think about this injury, and does this necessarily affect the offense that much, or just next man up on the tight end depth chart?
I don't think it's as simple as next man up, because I think Irv Smith is just a different athletic specimen than Tyler Conklin is. Tyler Conklin does have some standout traits. Per player profile, player profiler, his burst score is in the 89th percentile. His agility score is 76th percentile, and his catch radius is 82nd percentile. So those are some notable metrics from Tyler Conklin. He hasn't had too much production in college, though. I think he had 42 receptions was his highest amount of receptions in college for 560 yards and 6 touchdowns. In the NFL, his highest amount of targets and receptions were 26 targets and 19 receptions in 2020. So if we looked at what Irv Smith did for the past 2 years, he was largely unproductive. He's very inconsistent. He should have got it going earlier. I know the tight end position is a lot more, it takes a lot more time to develop in the NFL, and probably third year was the optimal window you want to see a tight end break out. So it's a shame that we don't have Irv Smith, but I really wouldn't be putting my chips on Tyler Conklin as a reliable fantasy option, primarily because it's not really what that offense revolves around. It was already shaky grounds with Irv Smith in fantasy. Like, he was going in the back half of drafts for good reason, because we were told last year, I remember last year's training camp reports were, he's being split outside, he's being used out wide, and I was just all aboard Irv Smith. I was like, yes, we're finally using the guy the way he's meant to be played, not just keep him in line tight, to the line, but they're using him out wide. So it's already shaky grounds. So I'm not really worried about Conklin. He's an all right prospect. If you want to take him in a deep league, like a really deep league, you just kind of stick him there and see what he does for a little bit. But again, I think the original impression from the media and the basic echo chamber is that Irv Smith is not going to be out for the entire year. So it's again, not get too invested in Conklin until we get some more absolute solid sound news on Irv Smith's injury.
No, I agree. And there has always been talk, even with Irv Smith possibly breaking out, just there's not enough targets to go in that run heavy offense with Thielen and Justin Jefferson. And I know there was worry that Justin Jefferson would miss some games, but it looks like he's back in practice. So it looks like that injury is not that bad. So so the tight ends never get that many targets. I guess the main thing was just hope that Thielen isn't going to continue to get all those targets in the red zone, and maybe the tight end Irv Smith would get some of those. But like I said, I wouldn't bank on that. It's a fine, Irv is a fine sleeper type tight end if you don't go for the first, top five tight ends. But, it's a little heartbreaking because, like I said, I made some trades to get Irv Smith. But hopefully he'll be able to come back this year and, provide some value going forward.
For sure.
All right. We did this last week, but we're going to do some more redraft pick'em since redraft season is going on now, really ramping up the next 2 weeks. So the first one is Chase Claypool versus Jerry Jeudy, both second-year receivers. I think most would consider Claypool's year more successful than Jeudy's last year. So who do you have in PPR format for this?
Jeudy. Yeah, Jeudy. I'm so much more higher than Jeudy on Jeudy than a lot of people are. I think that he's a better receiver than Chase Claypool is. I mean, Chase Claypool, they schemed Chase Claypool really nicely last year, but Jerry Jeudy's just a polished route runner, and I think he's going to finish as the top wide receiver on the Broncos this year, especially with Teddy Bridgewater over there. We don't have to discuss it. If you're just coming into fantasy, Teddy Bridgewater, newsflash, Teddy Bridgewater is better for Jerry Jeudy than he is for Cortland Sutton. Jerry Jeudy is going to be getting lit up in PPR. I made sure to lock up Jerry Jeudy in one of my auction drafts this year, and I'm not letting go of him. So I have Jerry Jeudy above Chase Claypool. I love Chase Claypool, but in PPR, it's Jerry Jeudy by a significant margin.
I'll have to agree. I also was very high on Jerry Jeudy last year. I liked him the best out of all those rookie receivers when he was drafted. I think last year, you know, with all the COVID and not having the training camps and Courtland Sutton getting hurt, so everyone on that depth chart moved up a spot. I just don't think Jeudy was ready. But if you watch Jerry Jeudy on his route running, he just has some nasty routes that just gets him wide open. So I do agree that Teddy will probably go with him a lot because he'll just be able to get open faster. And Teddy doesn't really throw down the field as much, and that's what Courtland Sutton does. I really like Chase Claypool, but I do think that Ben kind of holds him back because I think he's very good on the deep ball. But as we saw in preseason, when they keep on saying Ben's arm is better this year, but he threw, I think, a 40-yard pass to Deontay Johnson that he had to stop and come back for the ball. I just don't think he has that arm strength to consistently throw the ball deep. So that's why I think Juju and Deontay Johnson will get more of the targets. And even Najee Harris, it seems like he's going to be heavily involved the passing game. And even Pat Freiermuth, because he had that two-touchdown game in the second preseason game. So I do think Claypool is very talented, but he's kind of held back from that offense overall. So the next one is Tyler Boyd versus Antonio Brown. So I think both are underrated going into the season, with the Bengals getting Ja'Marr Chase, and just everyone thinks with Godwin and Evans that Antonio Brown is kind of in the background. I kind of looked up when Antonio Brown was playing for the Bucs with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Evans had the lead in the target share around 21%, but I was surprised Antonio Brown and Chris Godwin were almost tied at like 17.2%. And Antonio Brown ran less routes, but still got that target share. For some reason, Brady really loves Antonio Brown. He pushed for him to come on the Bucs. He was on the Patriots with Brady, and he really likes him. And I think AB didn't play football for about a year and a half. So I think him back training another year with Brady, I think he could do really well this year. I think Tyler Boyd will do well too, but I think Antonio Brown might have a little bit of a higher ceiling. Maybe can do some bigger plays, as Tyler Boyd's more the shorter route guy with the slot. So who do you have in this pick'em?
Well, I'm currently looking up who ran the most 11-man personnel between the Bucks and the Bengals last year. I'm on Sharp Stats right now. And while Joe Burrow, let me see here. So, yeah, while Joe Burrow was active, the Bengals ran 11-man personnel, they pretty much ran like the fourth or fifth highest percentage at 81% through weeks 1 through 10. And during that time, Tampa Bay ran at 64%. But also, I think Antonio Brown was just coming to the team around that time too, like middle of the season. So I think the personnel groupings might have kind of fluctuated. We agree a lot, but I love Tyler Boyd, but Antonio Brown is a Hall of Fame caliber receiver. He had a nice year off. He's working with Tom Brady. He's working with Bruce Arians. I mean, this team is going to be pass centric. They have a great offensive line. So from what I saw in preseason, it looked like two wide sets primarily consisted of Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. That was just last week's game I looked at, this previous game that just passed by. And I don't know what two wide sets look like for the Bengals, which is why I looked at personnel groupings. You know, what is your base personnel grouping? If we can expect you to come out on first and second down, especially first down, in three wide receiver sets, then I kind of lean towards that wide receiver. We don't know who that is yet. So if it is actually Cincinnati who's coming out in base 11-man personnel, I'll lean Tyler Boyd. I will lean Tyler Boyd. Their defense is horrible in Cincinnati, and we can expect Joe Burrow to just throw it a bunch. I'm totally anticipating that. I'm anticipating everybody to – I think everybody's anticipating that. So with that said, worst offense, a lot more 11-man personnel with Joe Burrow on the field. I will actually lean Tyler Boyd on this one just because I think he's going to see a lot more snaps than Antonio Brown will be. If what we saw during preseason is true, then Tyler Boyd.
Yeah, I think this is a really close one. Actually, I think all of these are pretty close. That's kind of why I picked them, because they're ADP is very close. Even though the Buccaneers defense is way better than the Bengals defense, Bruce Arians is always a passing guy. He doesn't like to run it a lot. So I think that could help. And from what I've heard, Burrow is not looked sharp yet in preseason. So he might have a little bit of a slow start. So that might be part of it, but it's close. But I will go with AB, just hoping he doesn't go crazy again and get suspended or something. So the last one we have is Chris Carson versus David Montgomery. So both of these guys, I feel like, are underrated, not thought of as highly as probably they should in the fantasy community based on, what they can do. So I'll let you go first. Who do you have in this pick'em?
I have Chris Carson in this pick'em primarily because of I think he's actually going to be involved in the passing game. I don't think it's a secret. If you don't know by now, Matt Nagy doesn't want David Montgomery on the field in deficits when the team's in deficits. He's actually come out and said, we want David Montgomery to be – I don't have the exact quote, I'm paraphrasing, but we want David Montgomery to be involved as much as possible. And to that point, essentially, if we want him to be that involved, we have to be able to keep up – we have to keep up with our opponents, score-wise. And if they're not, he's going to be pretty much phased out of the game. This is kind of like the work I'm doing with running back versus game script. We're looking at how these guys are utilized within the scoring context, right? So Chris Carson in week one of last year, he had, I think, about 90% of his fantasy production in week one last year came from his receiving, his touchdowns. He only had 6 rushes. I remember week one of last year. Small sample size, but I'm just to the point. Pete Carroll understands that Chris Carson can be utilized as a pass catching running back. So I'm going to keep it simple with this and go Chris Carson because the coach acknowledges his abilities as a pass catcher.
So I want to get your opinion. Do you think that the reason they don't play David Montgomery more when they're behind is that they don't trust him as a blocker or they don't think he's very good receiving back? Because I think from what I've seen, he seems like a fine receiving back. I don't know about the blocking, but is this just another misstep by Nagy and coaching?
Yeah, I believe so. I think David Montgomery is a great pass catcher. I think he's a great receiver. Every time he catches the ball, it makes it look so good. I think he's just making it more complicated than it should be. Maybe he really believes in alternating running backs. He believes in different archetypes of running backs in a different skill set. He knew Tariq Cohen was hurt, so he brought in Damian Williams. The band plays on. This is what's going to happen. This is just what's going to happen in this offense. Nagy said it. We want Montgomery involved, but if we're trailing, he's going to be gone. He's not playing. He's going to come in, play limited snaps, do a lot of pass blocking probably. Just what it is. It's straight from the horse's mouth. Can't deny it.
Yeah, and although I like Montgomery, not necessarily as high as people are having him, at least earlier in the offseason because they went based on what he did last year. But the last 4 or 5 games, I think he played, 4 teams in the bottom 6 of rush defense. And he really, feasted on them, which that's what he was supposed to do. So I can't take that away from him. But with better defenses, I would assume that he's not able to do that. And the other thing is with Nagy, I feel like as long as they play Dalton, they're going to be trailing in some games. And, if that affects Montgomery, that's a big part. And like you said, Chris Carson, a lot of people, he's not a sexy name, but he always produces when he's healthy. And I think it's overblown his injury, that he's injury plagued, because he really hasn't missed a ton of games. But that's just kind of the narrative. And like you said, you know, I think a pretty good pass catcher. And I don't necessarily have a lot of faith in the backup running backs in Seattle. So I think, you know, as long as he produces and stays healthy, Chris Carson should win that matchup to me. And I think the Seattle offense will be better just because Russell Wilson will be playing, you know, the whole season. Whereas, you know, even when Justin Fields starts to play, he is a rookie, so he's going to make some mistakes. And I have no idea how long Nagy is going to stay with Dalton. It seems like he's changing his tune a little bit about, you know, how ready Fields is, but it seems like Dalton is at least going to get the first start. So he might get a couple games before Fields totally takes that over. All right, those are our redraft pick-ems. So now let's go to our fun segment about where we pick our top five chain restaurants. So we'll do like we did with the cocktails. I'll give my fifth and you give your fifth, and then we'll go back and forth. Sound good?
Yep.
All right, so fifth for me is Johnny Rockets. There's actually no Johnny Rockets in Jacksonville any longer, but when I was younger, there used to be a Johnny Rockets downtown, and my dad worked downtown, so every year when it was take your son to work day, he would take me downtown. You know, we would get some Johnny Rockets, some chili cheese fries. And I don't know if you were a part of this trend, but I was big when I was in elementary school playing Pogs, you know, with the slammers. And you hit. So there's a toy store, and I would always go buy some Pogs. So that was kind of, you know, I would sit in his office and be bored for 8 hours. But the, you know, what I did get was Johnny Rockets and to get some new Pogs. So that's number five for me.
I've only eaten at Johnny Rockets once, but what kind of slammers did you have with your Pogs? Did you have the poison slammers? What kind of slammers?
I had all different kinds. I don't know if this happened to you, but our elementary school started taking them away from us there.
I think because it happened to every elementary school in the entire country.
Because they said we're betting and all this yeah, stuff. Boy. And yeah, whatever. But yeah, it was such a simple game, but it was so much fun.
Yeah, I never lost. I never played. I just collected them, and I had all the slammers, but I never played against anybody. But it's probably for the better because I'm pretty much a degenerate gambler now. So who knows how much more in the hole that would have put me in the degenerate world. So who knows? But my number five is Outback, and I like it because they have really good steaks. I just like their coconut shrimp. Actually, I've only been there like a few times, but they left a really good impression on me. They have just very good flavorful food. They have really good service, and it's a pretty much a good. I think we have one out here. I'm not sure if it's shut down actually, but we used to have one out here in my town. I haven't been there in a long time. Last time I went there, it was actually like 10 or 12 years ago. But yeah, so Outback for number five. Great coconut shrimp, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I like Outback also. So number four for me is Red Lobster. And I know a lot of people talk kind of against Red Lobster because it's a chain. It's not like the real, you know, real seafood. And I just think it's good. They have amazing biscuits. They have some good cocktails. They have their take on a margarita. It's called a Lobsterita. And it comes in a glass that's like this big around. And you know, they have good seafood, and like I said, the biscuits are amazing. I think they have pretty good service, and I know it's probably not the freshest seafood because I was just up in Maryland this weekend and I had some amazing oysters and crab cakes and everything. So I know it's probably not the best, but I think it's really, really good. It's not too expensive, and you usually don't have to wait a long time when you're there. So Red Lobster is number four for me.
Right on. I've never had Red Lobster before, but yeah, we have one right down the street from my house. I got to go one day. But we got number four for me is this place called Yolanda's, which is pretty much a chain restaurant in my neck of the woods where I'm at. We have like three or four of them in town. Really good Mexican food. Killer margaritas served in like glasses that big. Every once in a while, I just need a margarita. You know, just daddy needs a margarita every once in a while. Nice salt on the rim, cold glass. crushed ice. So good just to take the edge off of the day. Their portions of food are great. Like, they'll serve like three perfect hard shell tacos with like shredded pork, beef, or chicken, stacked with a bunch of shredded cheddar cheese, big portion of beans, big portion of rice. Just the chips keep coming to the table with salsa. Like, it's just really nice. And the Yolanda's by my house. It's like in the harbor. So we just kind of sit and like watch the people on their sailboats and just, you know, just have a margarita and just enjoy the sunset, man, you know, living that life. So it's some good food.
That sounds amazing. Even though, you know, I'd never heard that place before, it sounds amazing. So I will take your word for that. So number three for me is P.F. Chang's. There's one about 15 or 20 minutes from my house. And I like it because, you know, you can order, you know, if you go with, you know, a few people, you can order kind of family style and just share everything. I think all the food is good. I'm a big fan of Asian food, so I know that's stereotypical, but I do love it. You know, I love fried rice, and my favorite is either the sesame chicken or the pepper steak. They have lettuce wraps too there that are very good. So P.F. Chang's is number three on my list.
Right on. Right, my number three is this place called Marie's Italian Kitchen. Again, I don't know how broad it is in the country, but I know that they have a few out here where I live again, so I consider it a chain restaurant. They have just standard good Italian food. Nothing super high-end, nothing like cheap, horrible, bad, you know, bad quality food. They have really good pasta, just solid food. Marie's Italian Kitchen, I started eating there because after my friend post-college, my friend worked as a delivery driver from Marie's Italian Kitchen. So I was just like working a part-time job. I really didn't have much to do. And he and I would hang out all the time. So I would just kind of sit shotgun with him, like pretty much during his entire shift, we'd listen to hip hop. And like, he just bring me like the greatest bread, like this great garlic rosemary bread. He just bring it in tinfoil. So I would just be eating bread for like 4 or 5 hours, drinking Coca-Colas. And they had the best bread. Like just like this oil base on it with like rosemary and garlic and salt, big salt crystals. It's delicious. That's my great memory of Marie's Italian Kitchen, is riding shotgun eating bread. Love the food. Love the bread.
Yeah. So bread is always a big thing at a restaurant if they have good bread. So that's why my number two is Texas Roadhouse. There have been weeks where me and my wife have gone there 2 to 3 times in a week. It's just really good. They have the rolls. She actually really likes the salad they have there, which is, you know, usually don't go to a steakhouse for the salad, but she can get a grilled chicken salad there. I think they have good steaks and ribs, and their service is always really good. Even during COVID, because I know a lot of restaurants have been, you know, down on staff. But every time I go there, even though they have a now hiring sign, there's always good service there. And the only problem is a lot of times there's can be an hour wait, you know, especially around dinner time. But that's my number two. It's always very good.
My number two is another place out here. It's Marie Callender's. I know they're kind of like a household name because they have like frozen foods in your supermarkets. But out here, Marie Callender's, their style of food is comfort food. So you'll see like a lot of chicken pot pie and like that kind of like good, like comforting food. But what they're most known for is their pies. So, you know, we go to Marie Callender's a lot sometimes. Well, we used to, they shut down, but we used to go to Marie Callender's, pick up a couple of pies before like Thanksgiving, great pumpkin pie, key lime pie, chocolate pie, pecan pie, apple pie. They had so many great pies, but you know, my fiance and I, we love to go and have comfort food for dinner. We don't really go to like really high-end restaurants. We love going to like a nice deli place like a Marie Callender's and getting just some good, just fried food with like big portions of steak fries. And Marie Callender's was that place for us. We would always go to before they shut down. And right now we don't really have a place to go to. So yeah, it's a shame. But yeah, Marie Callender's is my number two.
Yeah, I do love comfort food places. It didn't make the list, but just outside would probably be Boston Market. We don't have any more in Jacksonville, but when I lived in Orlando, I used to, you know, go to the Boston Market because I was in college. You know, you don't get home-cooked meals, so that was the closest thing you could really get to a home-cooked meal. So I do love the comfort food type places. So number one for me is Olive Garden. I love Italian food. Yet again, kind of like Red Lobster, a lot of people say, you know, it's not true Italian food, but I think it's delicious. The breadsticks, the salad, you know, all the pastas. And even though when I was in college, I worked at Olive Garden in the back and I just made the salads, which you cannot believe how many salads at Olive Garden you have to make during the day. It was ridiculous. It's crazy. Everyone wants the salads. And just a little tip, you know, if you guys just get the soup and salad, your waiter hates you because they would always come back to the back of the kitchen and complain about the people that just got soup and salads. I'm not saying you shouldn't get it, but they definitely hated that. So Olive Garden's number one for me.
Yeah, Olive Garden's a solid one to go to. I've actually only eaten there once. And yeah, it sucks because their breadsticks, I know, are to die for. My number one is In-N-Out Burger. I consider them a restaurant. I know you guys are like, no, that's fast food. It's fast food. No, they're a restaurant. Their quality food is way better than, you know, McDonald's or Burger King. They actually care about the quality of their food. And like you said, you used to work at Olive Garden as your number one. My number one, I worked at In-N-Out Burger. That's where I used to work. So that's kind of weird that you used to work at a place and I used to work at a place that our number ones are. And In-N-Out Burger, if you haven't had it, I know they're starting to expand eastward slowly. I'm not sure if they have any in Florida yet, but In-N-Out Burger is their lines at those drive-thrus are always out into the street. Their drive-thru parking lots are always just like two huge lots of just this car is just wrapping and snaking around into like weird configurations. When I worked there, I would get a double-double for lunch and a double-double for dinner, which is basically two meat, two cheese patty, fries. They have secret menu items where you can get like stuff called like animal fries, which is basically it's just fries with two slices of cheese and then grilled onions on top of the cheese, or you could do animal style burgers, which is it's basically like they put on like fried pickles on. I forgot. It was like fried pickles and like they fried the patties with mustard. So it's got like a little bit more tang to it, but yeah, it's really good food. Great milkshakes. Some of the best pink lemonade in town. So, you know, if you like pink lemonade, In-N-Out's definitely a great place to go to. But yeah, if you ever get the chance, if you're ever in a town that has In-N-Out, do yourself a service and make sure to stop there before you leave that town.
Yeah, I don't think, at least not near me in Florida, we have In-N-Out, but I've heard great things. I want to try it. So I definitely, yeah. So, you know, I would consider that a restaurant. So, you know, I said Johnny Rockets, another burger place. So I think that counts. So that is our top five chain restaurants. And to close the show, since preseason's over, we're going to give our predictions for who's going to win each division. So we'll start with the AFC East. And I will go with the Buffalo Bills. I just think they have the most talent. They have the best quarterback in that division. I don't love the running back, depth chart there. But it doesn't seem to matter because Josh Allen's really their goal line back because he runs a lot, you know, in the around the five. And he's such a big guy. He doesn't seem to, you know, get banged up very much. I would hope they would run him a little less, but we'll see how that goes because I think Devin Singletary has actually looked good in preseason. I know not many people are high on him. So I think he could do some things for that team. But I just think the Bills will win that division, I believe, by a game or two pretty easily.
Yeah, I was looking at your list, and you pretty much chalked it all up to the chalk guys. Yeah, I was like, all right, I gotta mix it up. So I put some other guys on the team. I put some other guys on the list. So for the AFC, I got AFC East, I got the Patriots. I think Bill Belichick is a very smart guy. I think he knows how to mix up. He's known for taking away the best weapons of offenses. And in the case of the Bills, that's Stephon Diggs. But Josh Allen can make it work without Stephon Diggs. I think he can move around. Josh Allen might be the best weapon on that team. So it's really hard to decipher who's the best weapon on the Bills. But Bill Belichick is a football mind that should not be underestimated. I think he got a good long look in 2020. That was a freaking dumpster fire for the Patriots. I think he's going to bring it this year. Their defense is finally back to form. Their entire team was a wreck last year. Don't let 2020 sleep put you into submission or lull you to sleep. Just be on the lookout for the Patriots. They're going to put up a fight. And it was actually hard because I liked what the Dolphins defense looks like. And I think Tua has a lot of potential too over there in Miami. But Bill Belichick, I'm betting on his mind to make a strong push and give the Bills hell. He's not going to let them have that division easy. Oh, Patriots for me in the AFC East.
That's interesting. You know, I think the Patriots will be better, but I just don't know on offense if they have enough firepower. And if they get any injuries to those tight ends, I just think the offense might struggle. But, I do think that it will go Bills, Dolphins, and then Patriots. So now with the AFC North, I went with the Browns. So before the Dobbins injury and, all the injuries they've had on offense, I probably would have picked the Ravens because I feel the Browns struggle to defend Lamar sometimes. They, get good pressure, but they don't get contained. He just runs around and hits some, players that just work their ways open, kind of like Lamar does against everyone. But I think the Browns kind of pushed through last year, showed, kind of how to win. It seems like Odell Beckham is more, focused, and I've seen him and Baker work in the offseason. So I think eventually maybe they are on the same page. If that happens, then I think that offense could be very explosive. The Steelers obviously have a great defense and a lot of good offensive pieces. I just don't know if Ben can, handle the pressure against those good defenses and get the ball down the field. So he kind of struggled against the Browns in that playoff game last year. So that's why I'm going with the Browns.
Yeah, and I wanted to select the Browns too, but again, I can't just be consensus with you on every pick. So I'll pick the Steelers, and not specifically because I have to disagree with you on this pick, but I think the Steelers can definitely put up a fight. I mean, they've been the division leaders pretty much every year. The Browns are looking good. I like Baker Mayfield as a sleeper quarterback this year. I think he's going to cut it loose this year. I don't think he's going to be so constrained. I don't think they're going to be super tied to the run game, even though that'll be the fundamental part of their offense that they run off of. Everything will be built off the run. But the Steelers have Najee Harris now. They brought in Pratt Freiermuth, who looks really good, really spry. Deontay Johnson's there again. Chase Claypool's there again for another year. I think they learned a lot about what happened last year. They started off really hot, and they just started to fall apart. Nothing was working. So we got the Steelers coming back fresh for another year. Let's hope they can keep Ben Roethlisberger upright. Let's hope he doesn't make frantic panic decisions against the Browns. He usually has their numbers, but I think the Steelers and Browns are going to make it tough on each other. They're going to really be battling out hard this year for that number one spot in that division. So even though the Browns are a slight favorite, I don't think they're going to be pulling away with the division by any means. The Steelers are going to be right there fighting with them the entire time. I think they're going to keep it a close fight.
No, I agree on, I think the Steelers, Ravens, and Browns will all be close in that division. So I think it will come down to the last couple of games of the year to kind of decide that. So now the AFC South, it's not a very good division. With the Texans, I would assume, Watson's not going to play, so they're going to be, bottom of the NFL. The Jets will be a little bit higher, but, it's still unknown. They have a lot of new pieces, so they're probably, going to be bottom third. And then the Colts, with the, Wentz injury, and I know Wentz has come back, but I heard he's on the COVID list now. I'm going with the Titans because they have all those weapons on offense of Derrick Henry and adding Julio Jones. And I would assume that Vrabel is going to make that defense a little better because it was pretty bad last year. So I'm going with the Titans.
I like the Colts in the AFC South because, the Colts, they got Carson Wentz right now, who's, I think, he's an upgrade over Phillip Rivers. Well, whether you believe it or not, I think he's an upgrade over Phillip Rivers. I think he can do I think he's just got better arm right now than Phillip Rivers had last year. He can deliver the ball places that Phillip Rivers can't. He's not the most accurate quarterback, but again, he is younger. He is more spry. I know he was just injured, but still, I think he's a better quarterback than Phillip Rivers was last year. You know, they got Jonathan Taylor there. They're gonna run the hell out of the ball. They got their defense. T.Y. Hilton just got injured, but I don't think he's a major factor anyway in that offense. They're gonna keep it really, really heavy personnel. They're gonna run the crap out of that ball. And we saw the Colts go into Tennessee last year on Thursday Night Football and beat the pants off this. We beat the crap out of the Titans. And that was Frank Reich just coaching a really good game. We did see the Titans come back to Indy and beat the Colts in Indianapolis. So it was a one-for-one trade-off there. But the Colts are really, really well-built, put-together team. They have a great coach. Arthur Smith left the Titans. He ran that offense really well. We have a new coordinator coming to the Titans who is not – you know, he didn't do too well with the Raiders. So we'll have to see what he does there. But yeah, I think the Colts are just better put together on both sides of the ball and have a better coach. And for that reason, I have them as the division winners.
All right. So to finish off the AFC, we'll go with the West. As you said, this one is definitely chalk. I go with the Chiefs. I think the Chargers will be better, but they do have a new coach. The Broncos have, you know, the quarterback issue, and the Raiders, I don't really know what John Gruden's doing over there, and their defense has to improve a lot. I just think the Chiefs will, you know, just have too much firepower on that team, and their defense has improved quite a bit, and I think they have the best coach in the division also, so I'll go with the Chiefs.
Yeah, you took the chalk one for me again, Brandon. You took the Chiefs again. No, but seriously, though, the Chargers can do it. The Chargers can do it. Why not? You got Derwin James back. You know, you got Asante Samuel Jr. as a cornerback over there. You still got Chris Harris over there as one of their cornerbacks. They bolstered their linebacker core. I think they have a good shot to upset the Chiefs this year. Patrick Mahomes is one of the best guys we've ever seen play the game. And he's insane. He's absolutely insane. He makes it happen all the time. It's so hard to flush with that guy. But Justin Herbert played really well last year with one of the worst offensive lines in football. They upgraded their offensive line to where it's pretty much middle of the road this year. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Again, I think this is more a comparable situation to what we have in the AFC North between the Browns and the Steelers. I think the Browns are the favorite to win the division as the Chiefs are in the West. But the Chargers are not going to make it easy on the Chiefs. The Chargers should have had a better winning record last year, but because Anthony Lynn is just such an incompetent head coach, he made horrible decisions in terms of clock management, in terms of when to go with four on fourth down. Field goal kickers have been always awful. So they should have had a better winning record last year than they actually did. And just like last year, 5 years before that, every year before that. So I think the Chargers will actually clean up the loose ends and put together a solid winning season and have some good coaching around them.
Okay, yeah. I do like the Chargers. I do love Herbert. So I hope that that's a pretty good battle in that division. So now to the NFC East, I went with the Washington football team. I think they have the best coaching. Yeah, they're definitely the best coaching in that division. And I'm a big fan of Fitzmagic. I know that there's going to be some games where he probably looks horrible. But I think their defense is so good, and they have, you know, Antonio Gibson and Terry McLaurin and Curtis Samuel and Logan Thomas. So I think they have a lot of weapons on offense, and they're the best all-around team in that division. So I'm going with them.
Man, the Cowboys are going to just throw it all over the yard, man. I mean, I know that Washington has a really good defense. You know, Chase Young's he's one of my favorite players in the league. He's an animal. But, I mean, if you have a healthy Prescott, healthy CeeDee Lamb in his second year, Mari Cooper and Michael Gallup, who's completely underrated. You got Dalton Schultz, Ezekiel Elliott, Blake Jarwin, Tony Pollard. That offense is locked and ready to just light up teams in that division, dude. They're going to light up teams. Like, I know they got Terry McLaurin and Antonio Gibson. You know, Logan Thomas, fine, Curtis Samuel, De'Ami Brown, but those guys aren't even at the same level as what the Cowboys have, man. Those guys just need to stay healthy. We need to stop making stupid mistakes, and hopefully their defense got a little bit better this year. It doesn't even matter, though. Defense is not part of the equation. Cowboys are going to make it impossible for teams to keep up with them in that division. So I got Cowboys. Let's go. Let's go, Cowboys.
All right. Interesting. No, I don't disagree with that. That Cowboys offense is going to be amazing. If Dak stays healthy, I think Zeke, you know, is going to have a great year this year. And I like what you said about Michael Gallup. I like that they've said they're moving him in the slot more. I think he's a very underrated receiver. And if you put him on a different team, I think he could break out, you know, very possibly be a borderline wide receiver one if he was in the right situation. So now we'll go with the NFC North. I picked the Packers. I just don't think any of those other teams, you know, can really fight for that. I would like to see when Justin Fields gets in there that the Bears might be able to challenge them. But, you know, with Aaron Rodgers back, I think he's going to play mad, you know, with everything's going on and just show what he can do. So I think he'll have another great season. So Packers.
I got Packers on the board, but I'm changing to the Bears by default. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to come out and throw a shit fit and cry about everything. And sorry, I mean, that was the first S-bomb that we've dropped on the show. So I think I just popped the show's cherry as far as like cursing goes. But he's going to start pouting. And yeah, whatever, he's mad, whatever. But the thing is, when Tom Brady gets mad, he plays so good. When Aaron Rodgers gets mad, he just becomes like a big baby, you know? And I can't stand it. So Justin Fields, week two, he comes on the field. He starts scrambling. You know, he's going to have to scramble because the offensive line is garbage. So he's going to have to scramble a lot. He's going to mix it up. He's going to make it hell. He's going to run all over the place. Allen Robinson's a baller. Darnell Mooney's coming out. Cole Kmet's going to be tight end one. He's going to be a top five tight end this year in fantasy football. It's not going to happen. I'm just kidding. Don't take me seriously on that. Please don't draft him. But yeah, man, I think Packers are probably going to win it.
You had me going there for a while. I was like, he's really going all in. I was like, he's trying to get those Cowboys fans. He's trying to get those Bears fans to jump on board.
Man, I can't. I was trying to talk myself into Bears. I couldn't do it. It didn't work. Packers are going to win it.
All right. Now, for the NFC South, I have the Buccaneers winning it. I just think they're the best all-around team. And you would think with all the Super Bowl rings, Brady would be satisfied. He's never satisfied. So, yeah, I have the Bucs. Are you going to try to tell me it's not the Bucs?
I'm not doing this exercise again. I'm not going against the Bucs. We're not going to do that again. That was so exhausting trying to talk myself into another team that wasn't shocked. You go ahead. Go ahead for this next one.
Yeah. Okay, so the last division is the NFC West, and this one was a little tough for me. I picked the Rams. Don't love that, you know, Cam Akers got injured. Daryl Henderson's there, and they got Sonny Michel, so I think that helps the running back. Obviously, that's not great for fantasy, but as an NFL team, I think those two running backs are fine, you know, especially on that offense with Stafford and Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods. And that defense is going to continue to be very good as long as Jalen Ramsey doesn't have another hissy fit and try to get traded. I think he's kind of happy there. So I think he'll play well for the Rams. So I picked the Rams.
Who's the best quarterback in the NFC West?
I would have to say Russell Wilson.
And who won a Super Bowl in the NFC West? Did Russell Wilson win a Super Bowl, or did Matthew Stafford ever win a Super Bowl, or have the Rams won a Super Bowl, or Shanahan?
I don't like these questions that you're asking that you already know the answer to.
Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and pick the Seahawks. I think Shane Waldron is really going to open that. And on our show sheet, I didn't write the Seahawks to win the division. I wrote Russell Wilson to win the NFC West division because Russell Wilson is finally going to get what he wants. He made a little bit of a fuss this offseason, said he wants out. They made the offensive line better this year. They brought in Dee Eskridge. Tyler Lockett has been talking all camp about how they're opening it up, how they're going to start doing different things with the receivers. So expect Russell Wilson to turn up the heat on the stove a little bit and get that nice little sear going on that fantasy production. Start cooking a little bit. Expect it to happen this year. It's going to happen this year, man. Russell Wilson is going to come out and drop a bomb on the NFC West this year, man. He's going to just drop a bomb. Sean McVay has no idea what's coming for him. Kyle Shanahan is over there playing rotate the quarterbacks with my third round pick that my first, second overall pick. I'm going to rotate him with Jimmy G. Yeah, okay, Kyle, you go ahead. See how that works out. Kyle Murray isn't Kyler Murray doesn't look sharp at all of this off preseason. He's scared. He doesn't want to run out of the pocket anymore. Russell Wilson's like, dude, you guys are all tripping. You got old Stafford over there, and you know McVay doesn't even, you know, he won't change his game plan for anybody. And the Seahawks are over there. They're completely evolving the offense to fit Russell Wilson. He's the one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Russell Wilson is going to come out and light up the NFC West. They're going to win that division by four games. Four games. I just made that up right now. I'm saying four games.
Four games. Wow. Wow. That's a lot of disrespect you're throwing to all those other teams in the West.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Hey, you know what? I'm going to disrespect Kyle Shanahan. I'm so mad at what he's doing right now, talking about rotating Jimmy G with Trey Lance. Just let him start. Let him start. And I don't, dude, I'm so tired of that division. I'm like, just Russell Wilson is the best in that division. I love Stafford. He's great, but Russell Wilson's light years above what Stafford is. So put me down for the
Well, Russell I hope Wilson you are up. Right, because last year they said they were going to let Russ cook, and they let him cook for like the first half of the season, and then it all went away. So I hope. I love Russell Wilson. So, yeah. You know, so we have our predictions for the divisions. Maybe next week or the week after we'll go and pick our Super Bowl champs before the season starts. So that is our show for this week. And I hope that you have a good vacation this week. And I am Brandon Hay at HayB3.
I'm Zada Cantabedi and Zcants FF.
And thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.